Hey guys, I'm your host Adam McCabe, and welcome to the Gay Footballers Podcast. For my first-time listeners, thank you so much for giving the show an opportunity. I really hope you enjoy the podcast and return for the following episodes. For my return listeners, thank you so much for continuing to support the podcast. Sharing the podcast, giving us good reviews and ratings has really helped it grow, and I urge you guys to continue to do so. Just a quick synopsis for my first-time listeners. The Gay Footballers Podcast is a podcast with the goal to spread the awareness of LGBTQ and ally representation in sports. The main sport, of course, or the main focus is going to be soccer, or football, as we say in the United Kingdom. It's the sport that I grew up playing, it's the sport that I love, and it's the sport I continue to play, even though I fight injuries left and right. But each week I'm going to interview an individual who plays soccer, who works in soccer, or works for an organization that's looking to change soccer, and they either identify as LGBTQ or they're an ally trying to make soccer a better place around the world. And we're just going to learn about their challenges they face day in and day out, what opportunities they have had since their roles, and what successes they had. And we're just really hoping to spread a good, positive light on these changes within football. So for this week's episode, I'm going to introduce you guys to Jay. And Jay works for Stonewall, the charity organization in London, but he also plays for Stonewall FC, the most successful LGBT plus football team in the world. And I was able to interview and meet Jay back in February in London when I was speaking at a sports conference. And it was such an amazing interview because we got to talk about football, him playing for Stonewall FC, but we also got to talk about the amazing things Stonewall, the organization, is doing. And Jay's the sports campaign manager at Stonewall. And if you're a soccer player or even an athlete, you may have seen the Rainbow Laces campaign the past couple of years. It was last November and December that it debuted. And people all over the world are wearing rainbow laces in their cleats or in their boots. And it's an amazing visible campaign that's really trying to promote inclusivity and diversity within sport. And Jay basically leads that whole initiative. So amazing to find out who did that, but just to find the background of what Stonewall does, and to learn more about the huge success of Stonewall FC. And I'm not going to spoil anything that Jay had to say. We're going to go ahead and get right into it. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce you guys to Jay. Jay, I want to thank you for joining me here at the beautiful office at Stonewall. I passed by it, but man, it's a pretty office. So thank you for joining me today.
No problem. Thank you for coming by.
So this is going to be an interesting interview because not only does Jay work for Stonewall, the organization here in the United Kingdom, he also plays for Stonewall FC. So this is kind of like a double whammy here. We're going to get a lot of insight into football, but also what he does at Stonewall and what Stonewall does in general here in the UK. So let's start off by just kind of walking through what you do personally for Stonewall, the organization.
Yeah, so I'm the sports campaigns manager at Stonewall. So my remit is essentially managing the Rainbow Laces campaign, but because we're quite a small team here, so as well as prioritising that, another part of my remit is also looking after all the sports partnerships we have. So we've got a partnership with the RFU, the Premier League, we just announced a partnership with the FA. So in terms of, as the campaign grows, our remit in terms of the authentic conversations that we're having with sports means that we're developing these really authentic partnerships as well.
And one of the things you pointed out, and what many of the listeners will probably know, is the Rainbow Laces campaign. For me, visually, it's a tremendous campaign, right? I remember even last year, really, there was a huge buzz about it. And I remember looking through social media and just seeing a lot of feet, a lot of boots, I'll say, but with these Rainbow Laces. And it's It's a really good visual, and it was a really good idea. Can you talk about kind of where that idea came from, or why laces?
Yeah, so again, I think it was, the campaign was born around 2013-2014. It was a campaign which was originally launched with Paddy Power, who are a gambling agency here in the UK. And at the time, Stonewall hadn't done any work within the sporting space at all, and it was kind of an opportunity for us to get our feet through the door and understand that people who are LGBT experience some negative things within the footballing space, and it was a chance for us to apply some of the learnings and some of the practice that we do within our workplaces and schools, and try our hand at it in sport. So the way we sort of operate is we create momentum, we create a campaign, we create buzz, we raise awareness, and then we start to have an intervention looking at how we could really have those deep dive conversations which are outside of the laces and the PR piece. So again, like, I think it's grown from the launch with Paddy Power. I think it was a relationship which kind of benefited both. I think Paddy Power kind of wanted to do a bit more work in the space as well, and it also allowed us to operate in sport and kind of really try and make LGBT experiences a bit better. The idea around laces, I think it was just kind of looking at how we could be a bit more visual, how can we adapt a rainbow into sport. And because it initially started off as a football campaign, we realised laces, every player wears laces, so why don't we change the laces to rainbow? And that's how it came about, that's how the idea came about, and it was... again, like, I think we've grown a lot since the football and laces, and whilst that's a big part of the campaign, a lot of the visuals you see now are stretched beyond the laces, and I think that's what we're kind of really, really proud of, and what we're really pushing now is how we can really create those authentic shows of activations outside of laces.
I mean, I love the campaign, again, for many reasons, but again, I think visually it's so capturing, and even now I remember this past season in the Premier League seeing captains wear armbands that were rainbow colored, and so I definitely see that we're slowly implementing little, again, visual cues that will help with inclusion. So we've had the laces going on for a couple years now. Is there any, you know, is it corner flags next? Is it the back, you know, is the netting being rainbow? What's maybe some ideas or focuses you guys are looking to continue pushing with this envelope?
Yeah, so of course, we've got the laces. We've sort of developed onto the rainbow armbands where all 92 club captains over the course of the couple of weeks for last year's campaign wore the rainbow armbands. So again, that's incredible visibility, incredible show support and leadership from not just the captains and the clubs themselves, but also from the EFL and the Premier League who are sort of promoting that within their clubs. I think for us, the EFL do rainbow corner flags already. I know the FA sort of produced rainbow corner flags for their fixture. I think for us, it is about pushing that envelope. How do we kind of make it bigger and better? And how do we kind of, whether it's rainbow numbers, I think those are conversations that we need to kind of really further develop with the Premier League and the EFL and the footballing bodies to kind of really see what's authentic and true to football, whilst also maintaining the integrity of the campaign, because I guess we don't necessarily want it to become something that every player has to do. We kind of want people to support the campaign, and that's great, but we understand that there's complexities, and we don't necessarily want to force the campaign onto anybody. It's a positive campaign, and we hope that everybody will support it, but I think the beauty of it is that we aren't forcing anybody. It's a positive campaign. Everybody has the potential and the possibilities of taking part if they want to.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's not forced, right? You're not giving these laces out and saying you must wear them. I mean, because obviously you want it to be positive. You want people to believe in it and to themselves accept it and want to promote it because they believe in it. And I totally can understand that. Let's talk a little bit more about Stonewall, the organization. I mean, you are with the sports campaign, but there are so many more layers to what Stonewall does. Can you just speak? I know this could be an all-day conversation, but kind of just give a brief overview of what other areas you guys are active in.
So as an organisation, we've traditionally worked with workplaces. So we work with 750 organisations in the world, and we kind of support them on being more LGBT inclusive workplaces, so supporting their staff on how to be more welcome and create an inclusive environment for LGBT people. So that's traditionally our bread and butter, but we also have school champions where we work with over 2,000 schools up and down the country, sort of educating teachers on how to tackle HBT bullying within schools. So traditionally that's kind of been our bread and butter, but as we've sort of developed the campaign and as we've developed these partnerships, we're trying to apply a lot of the lessons that we've learned within schools and workplaces and apply it to football and other sports. Again, like I think through the campaign we've managed to develop the partnership with the Premier League, which is a three-year strategic partnership which looks at a number of different strands, from their comms to hate crime and harassment, to player care, to their community programs and how we embed LGBT inclusive content throughout those programs. So again, the reach of the Premier League and harnessing the engagement that they've had with the campaign, but them also taking a step back and sort of joining our Diversity Champions program and looking at themselves as an employer and figuring out where they can make steps in their processes and their policies for LGBT people internally. And then I think as we've started to see over the last year or two, their confidence in around communicating around LGBT issues have grown exponentially, because they know once the campaign comes around, they're doing the groundwork and they can say that they support the cause with a bit of bass in their voice, because they know that behind the scenes they're doing what they can for LGBT people.
So let's quickly talk about, I mean, how do you approach someone as big and important and large as the FA or the Premier League, EFL? I mean, you've got this idea, you see this issue. I mean, how does that marriage come together? I mean, is it sending out an email and you know, the inclusion director says, yeah, that sounds good. I mean, that's got to be a lot of back and forth, a lot of planning. I mean, talk about that.
I think it's all probably a bit of a perfect storm, really. I think obviously we've managed to capture the imagination of the nation with this campaign. And through the sheer fact that we've built a bit of cachet with our workplace work, we were able to create a conglomerate of organisations called Team Pride. It's a Team Pride of 10 organisations who come together from completely different backgrounds to effectively support the campaign. And Team Pride is made up from organisations from Aon to Adidas, to Barclays, the Premier League, Man United, Aviva. So all these organisations effectively come together, and I think that through that sort of partnership building around activating a campaign, all these other partnerships sort of develop. So again, I think it's a perfect storm of creating a really, really great campaign, which is incredible with engagement and raising awareness, and having those existing partnerships in place already to really have those authentic conversations and sit down with people and be like, okay, so what? It's great, you've chucked the laces on, you put all this support behind the campaign, what more can you do? What more are you doing, effectively?
Yeah, that's important. Again, we're seeing a lot of great things come out, but it's okay, now what more are we, we're seeing a great response, but how can we also continue to, as we said, push the envelope, unveil behind the curtain a bit. So let's focus on you now. So were you always wanting to be in this space of, or this line of work?
It's interesting, actually. Growing up, no. I think looking back at my time in school, I don't think they did a good enough job of telling you what kind of career choices are out there. So I never imagined myself being in the position I'm in now. I kind of went down the route of going to university to become a PE teacher. I was a fitness instructor for a year before I went to university. And that was my aim. I wanted to become a PE teacher. That's the only reason I went to uni. So I studied sports development. And I quickly realised that I didn't want to be a PE teacher. I was like, I'm a bit too immature as it is, so it might make sense for me to grow up a little bit before I start teaching younger people about how to be a bit more mature. So I quickly realised that that wasn't necessarily the route for me, and sort of doing my degree, I really enjoyed my degree. I learned quite a lot about some of the sociological sides of sports, some of the psychological sides and the ethics and morality side. So I kind of veered more towards that, and kind of, yeah, just the sports development element of sport kind of really attracted me. So it opened up my eyes to like those different career path choices. So I ended up doing my dissertation on homophobia in football. And through that, I sort of understood the landscape of pride in football, all the LGBT fan groups, Kick It Out, Stonewall. So through my degree, effectively, I kind of realised that there were more opportunities out there than I might have realised beforehand.
So after uni, did you come directly here to Stonewall? Is that the path?
So after university, I worked for a events company who put on sports conferences, effectively, for within Europe. And then through that, I joined Kick It Out, and I was at Kick It Out for a few years, where I was working with professional clubs and coordinating loads of education workshops through academies. And then from there, I moved on to Stonewall. So I've been here for about a year and a bit now, so it's been quite a journey. But yeah, it's been, like, if you had told me as I was writing my dissertation that after I graduated I'd have a job at Kick It Out and then I'd move on to Stonewall, I'd have bit your hand off. But yeah, I've been very lucky in terms of the opportunities I've been given.
So let's talk about football now in terms of Stonewall FC. So I think Stonewall FC hails itself, and I probably will also mirror their comments as one of the best, if not the best, LGBTQ teams in the football landscape. I think one of the oldest as well. Talk about playing for such a, I guess, historic and, you know, a dominant club like Stonewall FC.
Yeah, It's actually quite bizarre. So I joined the club, I think, 2-3 years ago now. Again, like it was one of those perfect storms where I found out about... I had no idea K football existed. I had no idea that these clubs were a thing until I was writing my dissertation. I found out about all these LGBT-inclusive clubs, and it sort of blew my mind. But I wanted to interview some players... some gay players for my dissertation, and I just carpet bombed every single team in the London Unity League just to kind of desperately get my hands on some gay players to hear about their experiences. And I found out about a team called London Romans, who are an LGBT friendly team based in North London. So I started playing for them for a few years, about a year, and in my second season playing for them, I scored. I think I scored like 6 or 8 goals in 2 games against Stonewall's 30.
Oh, wow.
So Eric, the manager of Stonewall, came to watch me from other games, and he kind of had a word in my ear about joining them. And initially I was a bit hesitant because I quite liked Romans, and I was also doing a bit of coaching over there. But I had a couple of conversations, and I played a friendly for Stonewall FC, and I was just kind of blown away by the history, blown away by the camaraderie and the sense of purpose in terms of trying to play at the highest level. And it was definitely something which motivated me, even though I didn't think I was at that stage. So yeah, when I first came into contact with the club, I was definitely blown away by the history and the club as a whole in terms of how it's run and the players that they have.
I mean, I have seen countless videos, interviews. I mean, Stonewall FC is like the club that people go to if they really want to learn about LGBTQ football. I mean, there are countless just videos of interviews of players, but that's a testament to the club and what they've been able to do and kind of capture LGBTQ inclusive football on a global stage. So, I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible. And again, like, I think it's... all the success that they've had, particularly the recent success, you can't forget where they've kind of come from and the people that have kind of put them and set them up into the position for them to succeed today. So like the Wembley fixture we had sort of late last year, whilst it was an incredible moment for the team of players, I was lucky enough to be made vice captain this year. So again, to put on the armband at Wembley was quite incredible. But I think that event was for the alumni and the people that built the club from a time when it wasn't as easy for us to be gay as it is now. So it's really important for us to kind of really look back on that and celebrate them as well as celebrate the occasion, I think.
So let's talk about this game you just referred to. Again, a very historic moment. So Stonewall FC played a game at the National Stadium, Wembley Stadium here in England. I mean, pretty big deal.
Huge.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing the lights, and even at the conference this past week, the lights were all in rainbow colors. I mean, it was decked out, and I mean, again, a huge moment.
Yeah, it still does. I kind of like think back on it. It still doesn't feel quite real. It's still quite surreal. They actually played a video of the event, of the game yesterday at the conference, and it was, I don't know, I got a bit choked up actually watching it, because I think at the time it just felt like all surreal, and it felt a bit like a blur, and I was just trying not to get overwhelmed by it all. But seeing the video back yesterday, it was quite emotional actually, and very emotive around just how special an occasion it was. Just hearing the FA talk about it, it's important to see just how much of a big deal it was for them as well as the players. It was a remarkable experience, and again, like, I think we were very privileged for us to be the team, but it could have been any other team actually. I think it was a great celebration of where we've come, and an incredible opportunity for Stonewall the club, but also a great opportunity to kind of shed the light on some of the great work some of the other clubs have done, some of the great work some of the other LGBT fan groups have done, and again, like a torchbearer to kind of show where the FA could take this. I think it's really important to kind of see that leadership, and very grateful that they allowed us to do that.
So I spoke to Funky at the conference, and we talked about the game, and I mean, like you said, for the FA it was a huge deal. When they were listing their accomplishments, I mean, I think it's, if not the top, one of the top things on their, on their list of what we were able to accomplish, and it's never been done before. And I think that's, I mean, one of the main reasons why it was so huge, but again, to shed visibility for the LGBT community and LGBTQ inclusion in football. I mean, I know I was jealous watching that video. I said, man, I would love to play in a stadium like that. I mean, this is the stadium that young English footballers say, I want to play in. I want to wear the England shirt and play in this stadium. And I mean, you got to do that.
Yeah, if I'm being honest, I always dreamed of playing at Upton Park, but I'm a West Ham fan. even within that dream, it stems from never actually imagining in your wildest dreams that you would ever be able to play at Wembley, whereas Upton Park or the Olympic Stadium as it is now is a bit more attainable because it's right on your doorstep. Wembley's just, it's beyond a lot of professional players' wildest dreams, let alone somebody who's a grassroots player. Incredible experience, and in terms of, I think it wasn't just the players' dreams that were made that night, I think it was the whole squad and everybody that's been a part of Stonewall.
So how big is that pitch? I mean, it looks humongous, yeah.
Huge. So we actually play on quite a big pitch. So our home pitch in Barnes is actually quite big anyway. It's probably one of the bigger pitches in the league. And then we arrived at Wembley, and we kind of went on the touchline, and I've been panicking about it for a few weeks. I was worried about doing like extra sprints and cardio in the lead up to it, because of just like trying to realise just how big it would be. And we got to pitch side, and I was like, this is quite huge, but because I'd built it up so much, it wasn't as big as I thought it was going to be. And then my manager came over, and he whispered to me, he was just like, 16 meters longer than our pitch at Barnes.
Wow.
And that kind of sunk in just how difficult that match was going to be. To be fair, like, when we were on the pitch, I think it didn't necessarily feel as big as that, because I think the adrenaline kind of kicked in, and we're quite a fit club at the best of times, so I think we'd done all our preparation enough to not feel it.
So I think it was 2 years ago, I was lucky enough to play with Minnesota Grey Ducks in the finals of a tournament in Portland, and we got to play in the Portland Timber Stadium, and I remember that feeling. It was like, man, one, this field is huge, but two, you get those goosebumps, you get that adrenaline. This is the same field that professional players are walking on, and you're like, man, I mean, it was an amazing feeling for me to play there. I mean, I seriously can't imagine playing at Wembley Stadium.
Yeah, it was remarkable, and it wasn't just necessarily the game and the fixture. It was all the prep beforehand and all the interviews that we were doing, the warm-ups, the sharing the same showers and the changing facilities as effectively the men's squad. And the whole package, just arriving before the game, going through the players' entrance. It was a remarkable experience, isn't it? And even if it was for just one night, you kind of got to feel just what like an England international would feel on a match day.
And I want to highlight, I think you talked about it earlier, like Stonewall has three teams.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, your first team, and I'm sure every other team, has a dedicated manager. I mean, this is serious stuff. A lot of LGBTQ teams just kind of, maybe, I want to say it, are not as professional, but you guys, I mean, are like kind of the ideal vision of what an LGBTQ club should and could look like.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think that was one of the things that surprised me when I joined the club, was just because for me it was important when I played at a very high level when I was younger. I played for university football. For me, football wasn't necessarily about trying to play at the highest level after my degree. I kind of wanted to do it to enjoy it. So when I met London Romans and I finally met LGBT people who played football, it was quite a bit of like an emotional experience. So I was just doing it out of enjoyment, just to kind of enjoy playing football with friends. So the competitive side of it wasn't necessarily a big element for me. But when I joined Stonewall, the fact that they still have a third team where they remain their links to LGBT grassroots football, and then they have a second team and a first team who play in mainstream county FA leagues, I think that's quite important, particularly for visibility and particularly for just allowing players to kind of play at the highest level if they are LGBT in a safe environment. So I think both are very, very important, and I think I was really, really blown away and impressed by the fact that the club still remains to do that.
And I want to highlight that very quickly. So the first and second team are in a typical Sunday league, Saturday league.
Yeah.
So not an LGBTQ specifically, because there is a league out there that many of the other teams, like probably Soho and Charlton and Invicta, that they play in. But I think it's like, even like you said, it's a step up for visibility. But it's, I mean, these are, I would say, tougher people who are looking to get higher levels. So it's, I mean, it's a tougher league as
well. Yeah, without a doubt, the standards are pretty. Pretty high, and again, like I think it's really important. The LUL, which is the London Unity League, where the predominant league of the amount of London LGBT teams playing, that's an incredible league, and it's really important for providing a safe space and allowing people to play no matter what skill level, no matter what their gender identity, sexual orientation. But I think Stonewall as a club realises that they've got responsibility, particularly with a club with as much media attention as they have. Providing that visibility in that sort of mainstream league is really important, not just for the club and visibility, but just kind of to influence others. I think we play football a lot of the times against people who may not have ever come into contact with an LGBT person before, let alone somebody who's gay and a footballer. And the fact that we operate in that league and we're competitive in that league and we're top of the league at the moment, I think that's really, really important, not just for visibility, but just for breaking stereotypes as well, I think.
No, huge thing. And I tell this to people all the time, a lot of people are just afraid of what they don't know. And then once they get to know that you and I love football, we love to have a drink, we love to go out, we're very similar, we just love someone different at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I think people see that and say, oh, okay, it's not so bad, it's not what I thought.
Yeah.
And that's really how we've got to try to move forward with some of the homophobia and transphobia 100%. We see.
Yeah.
So you guys effectively won that game. Just to have this on the record, it was 3-1?
It was 3-1. We went 1-0 down after about 15 minutes, and then they got a penalty after about 20 minutes.
Ah.
And then their chap sliced it wide.
Okay.
So we could have been
game changer, 2-0, yeah.
Could have been 2-0 down after 20, 25 minutes. But yeah, we went in at hot. We went in at 1-1, because I think we scored about 5-10 minutes before the half. And then we won the second half 2-0, so it was 3-1 overall, which again, like, it was We had a lot of friends and family.
Yeah.
There was a lot of friends and family there, so it was a bit nervy.
High stakes, when yeah.
We went down. But yeah, thankfully, I think we've been known to kind of turn up once the going gets tough. So.
And who was the lucky team that got to kind of come on this journey? Thankfully, to you guys.
Really lucky. It's a team called Wilberforce Wanderers.
Okay.
Who again, similarly to Stonewall, have been operating in the Middlesex County League for quite some time now. So I think they're probably the team that Stonewall played the most.
Okay.
And we've always had a good relationship with them. So in terms of any bad experiences, they've never had any homophobic remarks. They've never had any unsavoury comments or altercations. So I think it was they were picked for a reason, because they've been such good allies to Stonewall for so many years, and they've been good supporters of them being in that league. So I think it was really only right that we could share that stage with that team.
So let's talk about something you just mentioned in this league. I mean, is it atypical that you can get some homophobic abuse? I mean, you just said you guys are top of the league. I'm sure it gets under some people's skin, and if they're losing a match, they may have a quick word to try to get you off your game. Does that still happen today?
It was certainly a bit of a shock to me when I first joined the club, so about 2 years ago. I think one of the first experiences that I had, it was probably the literally only experience. It wasn't directed at me, but it was directed to my strike partner, and it was probably the first experience that I've ever had or ever heard of overt homophobic remarks directed at someone on the football pitch. So it was a little bit of a shock to me. And again, I think it was purely out of anger. And again, that player apologised in the changing room afterwards. But I've been surprised how few and far between it has been. It does definitely still happen. We've had perhaps one or two instances this season. But again, like, I think the league and the club, because they've been operating in the same league for a while, they're quite adept at dealing with this sort of stuff in terms of reporting. And the league's great in terms of processing those reportings and making sure that they don't happen again and ensuring that punishments.
So if you guys effectively win the league, will you go up a level or you stay there? I mean, I know English football is this huge pyramid. Like, will you, as a desire for the team, like, hey, if we win at this level, we want to continue to push on. We want to go to the next level and test ourselves.
No, certainly, yeah. If we win there, if we win the league this year, we'll go up. And then I think, yeah, we'll sort of join our journey and see how far at the table we can go. But I think it's been an interesting week because I think we've been an interesting year because I think we've lost a few players. We've had a traditionally older squad where a lot of them have sort of retired or stepped down a little bit. So we've got a really young team at the moment, which is really, it's quite important in terms of like a rebuilding process. So I think we've surprised ourselves with how well we've done this year. But again, like, I think it's looking promising for us to go up.
Yeah. Well, I will definitely have to keep an eye out, and I wish you the best of luck with the rest of the season. Let's just talk about homophobia in football. I mean, everyone's big question is, when will a gay male player come out in the Premier League, or for that fact, any other top league in Europe? What are your thoughts on what's holding this individual back, and what more can we do to make it a safer place or a more comfortable place for this person or group to finally do that?
I think it's a difficult question to answer because I always harken back to when I was in the closet. And I don't think it's just difficult for a gay player to come out because it's in football. I think it's difficult for anybody to come out whether they're in football or not. I remember the feeling being very oppressive, very containing, very just not very nice, and you kind of think irrationally. So imagine that times a number of different additional pressures. It's going to be quite challenging, it's going to be quite difficult. So I like to kind of veer away from the questions around when's the player going to come out and try and focus on stuff that you can control. So you can control creating inclusive environments. And you need to kind of, I think what we're trying to do as an organisation, particularly with the work that we're doing with the Premier League, is figure out how we control those environments. So one of the strands of the Premier League is looking at player care and understanding player care professionals who are already in place within the player care within professional clubs. How do we create more confident player care professionals around LGBT inclusion? How do we create more confident and credible player care professionals around supporting players who may be gay, may be bi, or questioning their sexual orientation or gender identity already. So I think there's a lot more to be done around creating the environment and things that we can affect. And I think once that's in place, then organically someone will come out once they feel confident. But it's a very personal decision, so you can never control that, and that's going to happen either way. But yeah, I think it's really, really important for us to just really focus on the things that we can control as opposed to what we can't.
And something I remember about Colin Martin specifically is before he came out to the world, I remember him saying he was kind of already out to his teammates at Minnesota United. And I mean, the help that, or one of the reasons he did it was, I mean, they didn't care, they treated him the same. And I think that could also happen in the top leagues is maybe a player will come out to his dresser or his dressing room and locker room, and that's all that really matters to him, right? I mean, so I think we're doing a lot, and organizations like Stonewall are helping lead the way. Something we talked about was kind of this momentum, this change, or this this really era where we're starting to really push and see these kind of ideologies of historic English football kind of break down, and whether that's because it's a younger generation coming through or just because we are unveiling that curtain a bit more and people are accepting it more. I think, you know, as we talked about at the conference, there really is momentum right now.
100%, and I think it's not just the Rainbow Laces campaign that's kind of achieved this momentum. It's leadership from the right authorities, the FA, the Premier League, the EFL. It's the fan groups who are visible and in stadiums every single week. It's Football for Homophobia in February. It's all this sort of perfect storm which has gathered momentum and has changed this climate of people understanding that the awareness piece has been done now. We really, really need to crack down and build up, sort of harness this momentum and really, really see what change that we can actually enact. And I think everybody's becoming a little bit more wiser. And I think particularly the leadership up top, the Premier League and the FA, they're definitely coming on board in terms of understanding just how serious this issue is and just really understanding that their power and their role in actually making football a better place for LGBT people, I think.
Any final words from you on thoughts around homophobia in football, thoughts around Stonewall, what's going to come from Stonewall, what you'd like to see for Stonewall FC, any kind of last thoughts?
I think for us, from a Stonewall UK perspective, it's, and again, I think we're about to sort of set the strategy, so we're going to have a 3-year strategy for the campaign. Part of that strategy is looking at wider sports and trying to move away from the narrative of homophobia in football, because I think football is actually doing some great work out there, and there's a lot of stories that we can celebrate from football, and we could use football as a beacon of hope for other sports to follow. So what we do know is that homophobia isn't just a football issue, it's a sports-wide issue. So I think there's a lot of, particularly in the media, and rightfully so because it's the biggest sport in the country, but I think there's a lot of positive lessons we could take from football, and we're trying to move more towards an all sports kind of narrative, and also looking at biphobia, also looking at transphobia, because again, like, I think whilst we've made certain strides around homophobia in football, I think sort of we can't forget our trans bi brothers and sisters who, for them, the challenges going to stadiums playing football are completely different. So I think for us, it's also trying to refocus on that aspect, as well as homophobia. But again, like, I think it's an allyship piece around how do we create better allies outside the community for LGBT people. But I think we could all be a bit nicer to each other, even within the community. I think gay people could be a bit more nicer to trans people. Lesbians could be a bit more nicer to trans people. Gay and lesbians could be a bit more nicer to bi people. So I think we should all just be a bit more nicer and just understand that we're all on this journey together, and we could be better for it if we work together.
Jay, I want to thank you so much joining me. I hope to one day see you on the pitch. I think that'd be fun. I think we played against your second team in the gay games, but I'm looking forward to playing the first team one day. And again, really, really looking forward to see what comes out of Stonewall UK. Would you like to share your social media or any social media from Stonewall UK that the listeners should follow?
Yeah, you could follow Stonewall Football Club at Stonewall FC on Twitter. My Twitter is J.90, so J-A-Y-D-O-T-90 on Twitter. Stonewall UK is just Stonewall UK on Twitter as well. So any information that you want about Team Pride or what that Stonewall doing, is definitely on our website and on Twitter.
And guys, I'll make sure to have all of these descriptions and links below. But again, thank you so much for your time, and I appreciate
it. It's been fun. Cheers.
Really hope you enjoyed that interview with Jay. It was really awesome to meet him. I got to go to Stonewall's headquarters and just really learn about the history of that organization and Stonewall FC, and hopefully I'll be meeting Jay on the pitch here next year after I can recover from my ACL injury. But on that note, just a quick reminder of our social media handles. You can follow us on Twitter at TGFpod. You can follow us on Facebook at The Gay Footballers Podcast. We're on Instagram at TG Footballers Podcast. And you can give us an email or give us a shout at tgfootballerspodcast@gmail.com. I want to thank you guys all again for coming on out and listening to this episode. We can always continue to grow. If you would do me a favor, hit the share, hit the retweet button, share us with your friends, your colleagues, give us any kind of rating or reviews on any podcast platform you're listening on, and we'd really appreciate it. If you've got any questions, concerns, reach out to us, and we'd love to hear from you. Until next time, cheers.